Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Sweet Home Chicago. Lori Lightfoot is sent into political oblivion. That's some good news. But will Chicago in the runoff make a prudent choice to do some very basic things, like stopping the criminals from running the city? Email me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Hope to see many of you on tour. Going to Kentucky next week, Ohio State University, Chicago as well, tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com, and get involved with Turning Point USA today. And support our show, charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Sweet Home Chicago. Yesterday, the first round of voting happened in the Chicago mayor's race, and Beetlejuice Lori Lightfoot has been defeated. Now, we should enjoy that for just a second, and we should talk about why that is the case. Why is it that Lori Lightfoot was soundly defeated? She finished third place, not even to make the runoff. In first place was Paul Vallis, who is a Democrat, and for years he was considered to be not exactly a moderate Democrat, but by new standards, he's actually more moderate than the Marxist Brandon Johnson, who is also going to make the runoff. So it went Vallis, Johnson, and Lightfoot. Lightfoot has been the mayor of Chicago the last couple years, and she is, without a doubt, the worst mayor in Chicago history. And that says something, because there's been some pretty bad leaders in the history of Chicago. And one of the things that frustrates me the most as someone who grew up in the suburbs of Chicago and loves Chicago is that this is not that hard. There are three very basic things that you have to do as mayor, just really basic things. Make the streets safe, try to improve your schools every single year, and don't borrow money you don't have, and have some sort of a vibrant economic plan or model that is implemented. That's it. Really simple. And basically any city is like that. You take New York City. New York City was declining. Rudy Giuliani became mayor and turned that place around. And Bloomberg, to his great credit, was a moderate mayor. And New York was a safe place for years. Now, there's other issues too. Homelessness, that plays into clean and safe streets. And it does beg a question, why is it that Democrats are so comfortable running cities that are becoming so enjoyable, so messy? It's because their ideology actually is more important than the reality. So Lori Lightfoot lost her reelection yesterday, and she lost it badly. She only had to finish in the top two of the first round to make the runoff, and there were more than half a dozen candidates, but she still couldn't even manage that. And that is worthy of celebration, but not so fast because there's a second round of voting. Chicago has a very long history, and it's a city that has gone through many different troubled spots, but she was, without a doubt, the worst mayor in the history of Chicago. Now, and the data bears it out. Every year now, Chicago and Cook County loses population. In the old days, Chicago lost people because they were just going to the suburbs. They were going to DuPage County. They were going to other parts of Cook County. They were going to Lake County. They were going to McHenry County. But now they're killing off the entire metro area thanks to mismanagement. So Cook County and the entire state of Illinois are bleeding residents. 100,000 people left Illinois in 2022. 100,000 people. Now, if my math is right, that's almost, boy, is that about right? 3,000 people a day, more or less. 2,800 people a day are leaving Illinois. I'm one of them. I left Illinois. Arizona, by the way, is one of the kind of refugee camps of proud Chicagoans. Do you know how I can? First of all, you just know that because the data shows it. But also, all of the famous Chicago restaurants end up reopening here. Portillo's, Culver's, all the Chicago-based restaurants, not to mention the Chicago spring training. I see more Cubs flags in my neighborhood than I see Arizona Diamondbacks flags. I see more Bears jerseys than I do Cardinals jerseys. And people say, oh, Charlie, it's all the weather. That plays a role. But I could say this as somebody who grew up in the crummy, awful weather of Chicago. I would move back there in a second if it was not an awful, Democrat-infested, dystopian nightmare of a city. The weather plays a role, but it's not everything. It was a great place to grow up, and it's lost its way. Hopefully, somebody can bring it back. 100,000 people left Illinois in 2022. In 2019, the year Lightfoot took office, Chicago had 521 homicides. That already made Chicago one of the most dangerous cities, but Lightfoot made it even worse. In 2020, Chicago had 798 homicides. In 2021, it had 855. That was close to an all-time record set in the 1970s. But remember, today, we now have surveillance cameras, far better trauma medicine. We should be better at saving lives. That should be going down. That should be actually not increasing by any way. It should be minuscule. It should be a fraction. In one single day in 2020, while Lori Lightfoot was telling us America was systemically racist, Chicago had 18 murders, the most in a single day in its entire history. Worse than the 60s race riots, worse than the days of Al Capone. Lightfoot has consistently set a standard of terrible leadership. During the Chinese coronavirus, she imposed mass lockdowns on the city. She closed basically every small business that she could, including every hair salon. But then she went to get her own hair done privately, and when she was caught, she said that she had to be the exception because she had to go on television. Lightfoot City bled itself dry. She called for making $80 million in the Chicago police. She protected herself with a special detail of 71 police officers. Those 71 were in addition to her official 20 bodyguards. And you could not go to the west side of Chicago in the evening without hearing gunshots or tragically seeing a lot of people get murdered in the streets. She couldn't care less. Lightfoot cannot run on her own accomplishments. So in January, she sent an email pressuring public school teachers to give students extra credit if they volunteered on her campaign. That's a fact. Lori Lightfoot was so desperate, she sent an email to public school teachers. If you volunteer for my campaign, you should give students extra credit. Magmile has become a homeless city encampment. Michigan Avenue, one of the most beautiful thoroughfares in America, is unrecognizable. It's boarded up. Chicago was this city on a hill, a shining city on a hill. And I am so pleased and I am thrilled that Lori Lightfoot is removed. But now what next? The runoff will be between Vallis and Brandon Johnson. And I do not want to get your hopes up too much because let's just look at what recently happened in Los Angeles. What recently happened in Los Angeles is former Republican, very moderate on the issues, and just wants three basic things, Mr. Caruso. He wanted safe streets, functioning schools, and an economy that is attractive to people and not borrow money. That's it. Spent a ton of his own money. Friendly business environment, safe streets, good schools. You just keep repeating those three things. If you're worrying about anything else as mayor, you should not be running for mayor. If those three things are not happening, forget it. So Caruso was a major developer in the area, spent, I think, between $30 or $40 million. He won the first round of voting, and then it went to a runoff. And we didn't cover this as much as we probably should have. And it was Caruso versus the Marxist, no exaggeration, no hyperbole, the communist, Karen Bass. By the way, do you remember when Karen Bass was in the running to become Joe Biden's vice president? Just came to me. That's an interesting thing to remember. And it was Bass versus Caruso. And Bass got all the union support. Bass got all of the public sector support. And Caruso, who just wanted to make Los Angeles have better schools, safe streets, friendly business environment. By the way, I support those three things. I know that a Republican will not become mayor of Los Angeles anytime soon. Can you make it not a hellscape? and Karen Bass won and Caruso did not. So we're going to talk about how that connects to Chicago, because I think the people of Chicago want a better place to live. They know something is wrong, but boy, I pray this Marxist Brandon Johnson is unsuccessful. I want to talk about ReliefFactor.com. I want you guys to check out ReliefFactor.com, 100% drug-free, knee pain, back pain, joint pain, elbow pain. Check out Relief Factor Energy. Help makes your body make nutrients readily available. Relief Factor Sleep. I know a lot of you are probably having trouble sleeping. Relief Factor Sleep could be the best solution for you. Everybody goes to bed. Not everybody sleeps. We're all about helping people live lives that are filled with connection, exploration, passion, and emotion. That is what his life is all about. Make sure you guys are sleeping well. It's a major part of life. Check it out right now. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. So the final results from the Los Angeles mayor's race was that Karen Bass, the Marxist, ended up beating Rick Caruso by 9 points, or about 89,000 votes. And so Chicago is showing, with their support of Vallis, who is definitely the more moderate person. You go to his website, it's like the most boring political website ever. If you would have saw this as a political website a decade ago, you would have been like, yeah, okay, what party is he? Literally, that shows how far our politics has fallen. He's just running on three basic things: better schools, friendly economic environment, clean streets. Now, Brandon Johnson, woo, this guy is dangerous. And by the way, I got a text message from a Chicago police detective. He said, it's about law and order versus destructive progressive ideals. We absolutely, all caps, cannot have Brandon Johnson win. You know they're going to turn this into a black versus white race, and it's not. It's about rebuilding a city that was once great, but they prefer playing race and identity politics. What's about to unfold in Chicago is a little bit of a microcosm of the macro trends that we conservatives have been warning about. Will Chicagoans wake up to the relentless propaganda campaign of race politics? Race politics? I mean, you go through Brandon Johnson's website, and this is how you know this guy is a problem. He has an entire portion of his website dedicated to gender equity. Anti-LGBTQ legislation and hate crimes are sweeping the nation. Chicago is a regional hub for LGBTQ community and culture. What culture is that exactly? We'd love to learn about that. With tens of thousands of LGBTQ residents and thousands more visiting from across the Midwest and the rest of the country, it is the duty of the mayor of Chicago to keep the promise it made to LGBTQ people and commit to further investment. He continues by, he's not just saying that he wants abortion to be safe, legal, and rare. This is what he says on his website, Brandon Johnson. The three things I would like to make absolutely clear. One, abortion is healthcare. Two, abortion should be a constitutional right. Three, we will not accept an America or a Chicago that goes back in time. He says, there is no middle ground on abortion. There's no middle ground on reproductive health care. Individuals should always have the right to control what happens in their own bodies, not the government. Right. It's really interesting, him being a black man, the amount of black babies that are terminated in the womb in Chicago, but that's a separate issue. Well, it's not really separate, but I don't want to get into that today. And so he goes on one after the other after the other, and very little about crime. And so the runoff is going to be a question of, can the great city of Chicago resist these macro trends of the woke mind virus that's trying to distract you around gender equity, immigration, LGBTQ rights? None of that. How about this? Stop the murders. And Vallis is running. Go to his website. He's running. By the way, he does not have good things to say about Kim Fox. Praise God on that. He's like, look, the city is bankrupt. We have great potential. It will be fascinating to see. And I have no idea how it's going to play out. But here's what I can give you a little bit of a sneak peek. Who is behind Brandon Johnson? Who is behind now this Marxist who wants to be mayor of Chicago? The cartel. The Illinois Federation of Teachers, the Chicago Teacher Union, the SEIU, the American Federation of Teachers, all of the worst organizations that have done such damage to the city of Chicago. They're all behind him. So he's going to have a ton of money. He's going to have a ton of support, not to mention all these other legitimately left-wing communist organizations like the Working Families Party, Activate Chicago Parents, 48th Ward Neighbors for Justice, United Working Families, People United for Action, the People's Lobby. By the way, just can I pause here for a second? Many of you wonder why these cities are so reliably Democrat and why they push for mail-in voting so hard. Just put that graphic back up. Look at how many outside group organizations they have that are collecting ballots, that go precinct by precinct, that go ward by ward to make sure that Democrats get the maximum turnout possible. It's illuminating, isn't it? I haven't even heard of half of these organizations. 39th Ward, Neighbors United, 33WF, 30th United Chicago. Anyway, the People's Lobby. It will be, and they probably all get federal money, by the way. It will be fascinating to see. The runoff is in April, and I sure hope Chicago chooses the more moderate option of Vallis. He's obviously got problems and all that, but he's saying the right things on school choice, on crime. I hope Chicago makes the right choice. It will be fascinating to see. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. That's right. You heard me. MyPillow 2.0. When Mike Lindell, great American patriot, invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. But now 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes it even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has a patented adjustable fill on the original MyPillow, and now with a brand new fabric that is made with a temperature regulating thread. For exclusive listeners, the MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free offer with promo code Kirk and get your best sleep ever. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in America and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square to buy one and get one free offer. Enter promo code Kirk or call 800-875-0425 to get your MyPillow 2.0 now. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Check it out.
What is going on in El Salvador? Well, El Salvador is not a country we talk about a lot. Unfortunately, the only reason we usually talk about El Salvador is the criminals that are coming from El Salvador that are coming into our country. But El Salvador is deciding to take things into their own hands. El Salvador borders the North Pacific Ocean. It is obviously in Central America. It borders Honduras and Guatemala. And it's a small country, all things being equal, but it's also a very violent country. In fact, unfortunately, El Salvador, most Americans, if they were to think of El Salvador, they would think of El Salvador as being a violent, a viciously violent, gang-infested country. But I think this is worthy of noting of how El Salvador has decided to take things into their own hands and be leaders. So the new president of El Salvador, in fact, I don't know if he's new. I just think he's good. I don't know how long he's been in office. We'll find out in a second. President Bukele has decided to embark on an ambitious new project. As soon as I saw this news story, I thought of a very specific Hollywood reference. Of course, I thought of Harvey Dent in The Dark Knight, where you just arrest like 2,000 gangbangers at once. He's been president since 2019, so apparently he's been working on this for some time. Let's go to Cut 60. Jesse Waters, who reports on El Salvador's new president moving gang members to a new mass mega prison. And is the country safer? Not only is it safer, but crime in El Salvador has dropped so dramatically there has not been a murder in the whole country in a week. What a concept. You lock up a couple thousand people so millions can be safe on the streets. Play Cut 60.
Just a few years ago, El Salvador had the highest murder rate in the world. MS-13 and drug cartels controlled land all over the country, terrorizing people, carving them up with satanic bloodlust. The people were crying out for help, and a new president rolled in, President Nayib Bukele. And so instead of defunding the police, President Bukele is giving the cops more money. He's rounding up every gangbanger in the country and throwing them in a mega prison. What you're seeing is 2,000 vicious criminals being transported to El Salvador's new mega prison. This is why crime in El Salvador has dropped like a rock. President Bukele said the country hasn't had a murder in a week. And what do the people in El Salvador think? They love it.
And I love it, too. There is a $1 trillion bill sitting on the sidewalk right now. And Republicans are refusing to pick it up. If Republicans got harsh on crime, and I mean hard on crime, it would win over millions of swing voters. I think in the midterms, we did not do a good enough job of talking about crime, largely because people were afraid of being called racist, because there is this mass movement to try to open up our prisons that is also within the American right. There are lies that are out there, such as people saying, well, our prison population is too big. Well, here's a thought crime for you. Our prison population is probably not big enough. How long do you think an average rapist spends in prison in America? I want to get my numbers right, but the last time I did this research, it's between 3 to 6 years. A rapist should get life in prison, maybe even get castrated as well, if you are convicted by a jury of your peers and you go through that process. Now, look, America is becoming a profoundly dangerous country. El Salvador has been a dangerous country, and they're showing that there's a way to solve it. And the left is losing their mind over this. They don't like the fact that there's a, quote, new mega prison. They don't like the idea of prisons at all. But honestly, God bless El Salvador for taking a leadership role, for saying, look, we are a small, relatively poor country, and our problem is really a couple thousand bad people. And that's what's so amazing about this, is according to the Washington Post, who actually, I don't know if they're that critical about it, but they get there. But it's only 2,000 prisoners. This week, he announced the transfer of the first 2,000 prisoners to the new facility. He plans to have over 40,000 there. If you're part of a gang, you're part of one of these satanic practices of cutting people up, the diabolical anti-human activities of the cartel, you're going to go to jail. Why is this so hard for Republicans to run on? Every time a Republican runs on crime, we win. And what's interesting, in my personal opinion, and I said this during the campaign, I think President Trump missed an opportunity in the 2020 presidential election when it came to Joe Biden and crime. He attacked Joe Biden for the 1990s crime bill. I hate to say it, but the 1990s crime bill actually worked. The 90s crime bill made America a safer country. Were there problems with it? Of course there were. But we need to have stricter laws for violent criminals, not looser laws for violent criminals. Look at our inner cities. They are falling apart. In the 90s, not only did we pass the crime bill, we put tens of thousands of new police on the street, and urban centers got cleaned up. Businesses rushed in. Were there some bad cops that abused their authority? Yes. That's what happens when you hire tens of thousands of anything. It's not acceptable. It needs to be dealt with. They should either be in prison themselves and or fired or terminated. But that's not an excuse to stop doing what works. And I did not think ever on this program we would be bragging on the tough on crime courage of the president of El Salvador. Why is it he's doing this? Desperation. He's doing it because his city has been savaged by these people. And now he has an 80% approval rating. El Salvador is showing that law and order secures long-term power of a leader. Political leaders, as we talked about yesterday with Joe Biden always trying to find a crisis, they're trying to find synthetic and fake crises. Guess what? This is an actual crisis. Crime in America is a real crisis. The left is like, oh no, it's perfectly fine. Everything's okay. Carjackings, looting, arson, people getting assaulted on the subway. I can say this as someone who has visited New York City for a decade. That city is a dangerous city now. And it upsets me. It makes me angry. And it's because of the ideological direction of de Blasio and now Eric Adams. Republicans need to learn this. Leaders will get reelected if they do three very basic things. Make your constituents' lives safer, happier, and better. This is why Viktor Orban gets reelected every time, no matter how much the media complains about it. I want to play another piece of tape here. Remember how we used to talk about crime in the 1990s? This was before all this nonsensical race stuff was all over our politics. But you know what's interesting? I'm re-listening to a series of lectures given by Dennis Prager on Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Numbers and Deuteronomy. And he actually gave them between the years of 1992 and 1999. Now, why am I mentioning this? Because he editorializes a lot in these lectures. I'm learning a ton about biblical Hebrew and all that. But every so often, he'll talk about some things that are happening in the news. And what's interesting is that race was in the news in the 90s. It's just people's attitude towards the hyper-racialization of America was, we're not going to become that. So it's not as if this is a new tactic, whether it be the Rodney King riots or whether it be Jesse Jackson trying to turn us into a hyper-racist country. It's just our attitude in the 90s was that we are not going to allow the idea pathogen of white guilt to determine or dictate our policy. Instead, you had Democrats talking like this, Joe Biden talking about the predators on our streets. And guess what? He was accused of being a racist for saying this, but it's true. There were a lot of predators on our streets, and the bipartisan 90s crime bill, it worked. Play 62.
It doesn't matter whether or not they're the victims of society. The end result is they're about to knock my mother on the head with a lead pipe, shoot my sister, beat up my wife, take on my sons. So I don't want to ask, what made them do this? They must be taken off the street.
And Madam President, we have predators on our streets. That society has, in fact, in part because of its neglect, created.
He has been attacked for that, calling him a racist and all that. There's a lot that you could attack Joe Biden. I think he is a racist, but not for that clip. That's a separate issue. But Joe Biden was just taking advantage of political oxygen that was in the room to try to benefit his future, his own political campaign. What happened to our country where we used to have bipartisan discussions on crime? The answer is that far left-wing ideological subversion campaigns, BLM, postmodernism, post-structuralism, through our college campuses, through social media psychological operations, have convinced us that we do not need to emphasize or focus safe streets, safe communities. Instead, we have to worry about systemic racism. This has been one of the great failings of America over the last 30 years, and I hope we can correct it. This ideology has done such damage. People have unnecessarily died. It's very simple. Need more cops. Train them well, put them on the streets, and crime is going to go down and people's lives improve. Someone says, Charlie, I cringe when you say Trump should have not run on this. It's Monday morning quarterbacking. Well, it's really not because I did it actively. So that's not fair to say. I was trying to say it during the campaign, but whatever. Okay, I want to play another piece of tape here about crime. It's the most obvious issue. In America, it affects everybody. And that's what's so interesting is who wants to actually live in a city or a place where crime is high? You have a choice to do something about it. Giuliani cleaned up New York. Play cut 64.
If you violate the law, whether it's insider trading or tax evasion or fraud or bribery, it's so-called white-collar crime, the overwhelming general rule is that you go to prison.
You commit a crime, you go to prison. Bill Clinton, speaking on the crime bill, cut 63.
When I sign this crime bill, we together are taking a big step toward bringing the laws of our land back into line with the values of our people and beginning to restore the line between right and wrong.
So Wayne emails us, Charlie, Republicans are not in control of stopping crime. Well, I'm going to push back a little bit on that. In many states, and yes, in Washington, D.C., Republicans, believe it or not, are some of the most enthusiastic supporters of jailbreak bills. You might not know that, but there is a thread, there is a part of the Republican Party that is trying to make it easier to get out of jail, to reduce sentences. It's a part of the Republican Party. I don't think it's a majority. It's the more libertarian side of the Republican Party. But that's certainly not where the country is right now. The country wants clear, transparent, fair and just laws. In Chicago, you have these district attorneys that have massive authority. Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, and Seattle. And, you know, I was asked the other day by one of our supporters at Turning Point USA, Charlie, how are we going to bring the country together? And one of my issues is, how about we all agree that crime is bad? That should bring the country together. You have to overthink that. If you loot, if you burn, if you steal, you should be held accountable for that. Look, the Republican Party has an opportunity here because our most beautiful institutions, our once beautiful cities that we have all enjoyed, are crumbling in front of us. And I understand the temptation to try to say, well, you know, we want to try to have criminal justice reform and all that. Look, crime is going up everywhere. It's going up across the board. Why is that? It's up at least over the last 5 years. It might be dipping down a little bit in the last year and a half. Largely because criminals are going to take advantage of what you allow them to do. And it should really also be a point worthy of mentioning. What makes the liberals most mad? The liberals are not mad when children are getting chemically castrated. They're not mad that crime is going up. They're really upset with this long piece in the Washington Post. They're furious that 2,000 criminals in El Salvador's human rights might be violated. First of all, it didn't look that inhumane to me. Second of all, based on the reputation of El Salvador's most violent criminals, maybe they should have thought about their human rights when they were cutting people open, literally. Part of MS-13. Not exactly a group that I think deserves your compassion or your sympathy. This is not someone who stole from a local grocery store because their daughter couldn't get dinner. These are not crimes of convenience. These are crimes of massive passion, horror, and hatred. To tie this all together, there's an opportunity. There's an opportunity for Republicans, the Democrats can end up doing it, but they're so bought and paid for by the race politics crew, it's probably not going to happen, of seriously and substantively addressing crime. It's going to take, though, a backbone, spine. Crime, as it's happening in Chicago, Seattle, Los Angeles, New York, it's a major issue. Will Republicans just say, hey, that's a $1 trillion bill for us? It could end up winning over swing voters. No one wants to live, unless you're ideologically corrupt, which some of them are, in a dangerous city. I hope the American right gets the message. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.